Okay, I'm doing an interview with Maffeo Bianchi from Princeton, Michigan, and it's July
16th, 1985. Set right on my
stereo. Oh.
Could use if we have to.
I can get some copies made of this if you want.
You got what?
I could get copies made of this if you wanted one.
Yeah.
Maffeo, as it's called. You came from Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And your parents came from Italy. Do you know when your parents came from Italy?
My dad came over here in 1907. My mother came over here in 1909.
Do you have any idea how they came here and why they came here?
Well, my dad was over here once before with brother of his and some people from the same town there, and he came back quickly and work was kind of hard to get over there, so he decided to come back here. So he was here for a while and he decided to send for my mother, and she came here, my brother Pete. And three was just left over there. Then shortly after, just before the war broke out, she sent for my sister, my older sister. She came over here. Then my brother Chester and I was left over there.
All by yourself.
So then the war broke out and we had to stay there, and then by then here 1918 my dad got killed in the mine. And my mother, she was undecided whether she was going to stay here or whether to come over there. So I wrote to her, I said, if you know what's good for you, you better stay where you're at. So then she sent for us in 1920, we came over.
I see. Where did your parents come from in Italy?
Town is Brano, the name of the town.
Brano?
Yeah.
B, you know the spelling of that?
B. B-R-E-N-O.
And what city is that near?
Lombardy. It's about 30 miles from Milan, 35 miles maybe, something like that.
What was your trip like in coming here? You said that you had came over in a boat?
It was a nightmare.
It was a nightmare.
We left. See, we had passage. We had booked the passage in the regular passenger boat. Then about 2 weeks before we were supposed to leave there, well, they wrote us a letter and said that we were overfull, and so they didn't have no room for us. So, meantime, well, we went to the agency, and the agency said they had this one boat come in. It was a merchant boat, it wasn't a passenger boat. So we, well, I was anxious to get here, and so we took that boat. So we left from Genoa. We went to Naples. We stopped 2 days in Naples, and then we went from there to Palermo, Sicily. And we stopped another 2 days. Then we went from there to Gibraltar, and we spent a night there. And then we came across from there in the old lake. It was rough.
It was rough?
I was sick all the way over.
How long did it take you to cross the ocean?
It took about 14 days or 15 days, I guess, or something like that. And then counting the days, we stopped here and there. And then, when I left Italy, I borrowed the money for food. Get the ticket, and I got the ticket first. Figure if I get to America, and then I can wire my mother from there. So we did. Got to Boston, and you know, they ask you a question. They were going, and if you got enough money to get there, and I said, no, I said, I haven't got the money. I said, I have to wire my mother. So okay, so they took down the address and stuff. And I waited 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, and never getting no answer. Going on here. So when in the office there, and I asked, I said, did you hear anything? They start checking and forgot the Senate.
Oh, jeez. And that was the immigration people?
Yeah.
And where did you stay when you landed in Boston?
They had a building all that were, I don't know, must have been 200 people in there. There were Japanese and Chinese and a little mixture of all nationalities, I guess. So they finally sent it. And, I think it was the next day or the day after that. We were sitting down having dinner. And he used to come in with his bunch of telegrams, you know, and they call out his name. So they call my name often. So that's it. I said, quit eating. Let's get out of here. So they took us from there. They took us. We went and picked up my trunk there. We had a few rags in there. And they took us to the depot there and they got a ticket. Couldn't talk. So the motion there, sit on that bench there. So we sit there. This was early in the afternoon, about 2:30, I guess. I thought we sit there. 3:30, 4:30, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock. I said, what the hell? They must have forgot all about us here. But they didn't, though. Now, at 8:30, they come on, took us over, put us in the train.
You were with your brother then?
Yeah. So we traveled all that night, and most of the next day, about in the afternoon sometime, and we ended up, I found out we were in Montreal, Canada.
You went to Montreal, Canada.
Yeah. So we get there, well, at the end of the line, the train stops and everybody gets off, and we get off too. Nobody tells us where to go, what to do, nothing else. So then we sit on the plane there like 2 months, you know. Yeah. And the guy there walked by, had a uniform on, he must have been working in that depot there. And he looked at us every time he go by, and he looked and he figured, you know.
These two guys don't know where they're going.
So he could go and talk to us, and he's Italian, so he could talk Italian.
In Montreal?
Yeah.
Was he a worker for the train then?
Yeah, he was working in the depot there. He'd come over and ask us, you're Italian? I said, yes. He said, where are you going? So I showed him a ticket. You know. Well, he said, there'll be a train coming in track number 3 there, I guess. He said, about 8 o'clock, he said, and you get on that train. So, okay, so. Train came that we got on there, took off. We traveled all that night, and all next day. The next day, I met a guy on the train there. He talked to me in Italian. He asked me where I was going, and I told him. And he said, "I was there."
That he'd been there?
Yeah. And I said, "When do we get there?" He said, "You get there tonight." Boy, I was happy. Good night to come. To some place over there, I found out that's over the Canadian Sioux over there.
You went to the Canadian Sioux from Montreal.
So the train stops there, don't go any farther. We get off of the train, we in the depot there, and they sent for an interpreter there, and they come there, and he asked us if we want to sleep in the depot or go to the hotel. I said, I thought we were supposed to get home tonight. Oh, he said, don't get home till tomorrow.
Oh, so it was a... rude awakening for you.
So anyway, I said, well, we were full of lice and half starved and I don't know.
Lice?
Lice, oh Christ, I could go up here and pull off a half a dozen.
From the train?
Mm-hmm, and the boat coming over.
That's it.
I found out after, I didn't know where I was at that time. But anyway, we slept in the depot there that night. That guy, the interpreter, gave me a handful of kind of balls, you know, the chewing gum. I didn't have to start chewing gum in my life, you know. Yeah. And I start chewing and I started chewing and I chewing and I chewing and I could never get rid of it.
But it was something to eat and you ended up chewing.
I couldn't figure out what it was. So anyway, the next day we got on the train and we traveled. We were down to Lawson down here.
Lawson?
Yeah, they're down here by Dukes.
By Dukes?
Yeah, there used to be a junction there, you know, one track goes to the Marquette and one comes into the lake. So then we had to get out there and wait for the train to come this way. So we stopped there and I was dry. And I looked around and I figured, in Italy, you know, in the depot they got a fountain there. Well, there they didn't have any. I said, there must be a place to get a drink of water. So this big tank hanging there with a hose in there, you know, I thought stuck it on there with a fire extinguisher. I was here gagging myself.
Was there water in the fire extinguisher?
No, sure, there was some fluid in there.
Some fluid? You didn't know what? Well, what did you eat in all these travels?
They gave me, when we left Boston, they gave us a loaf of bread with that big. About the next day, it was so damn hard you couldn't eat it. And then they gave us one little square package of soda crackers and one square package of graham crackers. And that's what we had.
Mm.
So the bread got too hard, but I got home and set up the pig with that. But anyway, on the depot there, the train, there used to be a guy come around and sell apples or chocolate bars, whatever it was, and can't talk. So I used to pick out what I want, take out a handful of money, and then he'll take whatever he wants. And I noticed the first time he took, I bought an apple, and I didn't know the value of the money neither, but I could tell, you know. The next time he took twice as much as he did the first time.
You tell him? Hey.
I didn't say nothing, I said that's a trap, so I didn't buy from him more. So anyway, then we changed trade there, and a different guy come there, and he was selling, they had bananas. I've never seen banana in my life. So we bought two bananas, Chester and I, and we started chewing on them. Never took the skin off. Everybody was laughing, I said, what the hell are they laughing at? So anyway, we travel all day, and that night we get into the lake here, and we're sitting on the train there, and two kids walking up and down the aisle, never looking at us. And I told Chester, I said, what the hell are they, damn fool, looking at us? And one guy come over, and he said, do you know me? I said, no. He said, my brother Pete.
It was your brother Pete?
Yeah, he and the neighbors, they come down and meet us down there. So I didn't ask him, how are you, or anything else. I said, how soon do we get home? I said, we'll be home in a few minutes. So we got up at the depot, there only got no one that deep.
Well, how deep, 4 feet?
Oh, at least 4 feet. You couldn't see a fence post any place in Princeton here.
And you were used to snow at all?
No. It used to be 3-4 inches of snow, and the next day it was gone. But anyway, we got over the depot there, and my stepfather was there with a horse and sleigh, and they took us down the Italian boarding house on it. And they had a big spread there, and they sat there all in God. I sat there and I ate. Well, then I was ashamed of quit.
You had to quit. I imagine you were hungry. What kind of food did they have for you?
There? Oh, God, they had everything there. Roast and chickens and whatever they, oh, God, they had.
It was all laid out because you were coming.
Yeah, they had it. And so we left there and I went home, and my mother asked me, you want a cookie? Well, I didn't know what the hell a cookie was. She brought over a box, 3-pound boxes of them chocolate cookies filled with
Oreos?
No.
No.
Can't think of the name of it. You know, you could fry them over the fire there, them little...
Graham crackers type?
No.
I don't remember.
Well, the chocolate cookie, and yeah, filled with this. Chester and I said, there, we have the whole box.
They ate the whole box. I suppose you're happy to see your parents.
Yeah.
At that time, your dad was working in the mine?
No, he was dead.
He was dead when you came over?
Yeah, he got killed in 1918, and he came here in 1920.
Did you know about that? Did your mother write you letters and correspond with you?
Oh, yeah.
And in touch. Had she remarried by the time you got here? Who was her husband then, your stepfather?
John Zanardi.
Zanardi. Yeah, I know who that is.
Yeah.
So right away you started to work in the mine?
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, a week later, a month later,
yeah,
or when?
A week or 2 years, I don't know. Yeah, started work. surface first. I went and surfaced in a steam shovel there for about a couple of months. And then I went underground.
What was it like working in the mine back then?
Well, it was tough.
Tough work.
Yeah. Everything was by hand, you know, and you had to work. There was no union in them days. The boss told you to go do something, you did it, or said, if you don't want to do it, there's a lot of people up there that, that wants to do it, so.
Mm-hmm.
It's either that or else.
Or else. And how much were you paid, and what was the working day like?
Well, when I first started in the mine there, I was paying $4.16 a day, I guess I was getting. Which was good money in them days. Well, and then things got kind of slack here in 1921, and they shoved the mine down. And then I got put home for a few months and got over the cement of mine. By that time, they had cut the pay down, I think it was 372 or something like that. And I worked there for a few. Well, then I went to, oh, I went on the trip there. We went down around Hurley, down there, around Nine River. And
by railroad?
Yeah, yeah. That's the way you could get around.
Were you married by then?
No.
No? Did you work like 12-hour shifts or?
No, it was 8-hour shift.
8-hour shift?
Yeah, it was 8-hour shift. Yeah.
What were some of the mine bosses like, and what type of nationality were they?
Well, they were mostly, well, the captains were all English.
All English?
Yeah, all cooking gas, the captains. And the bosses, we had one oil over here, and got joking, and a couple of Finlanders there. They had to have some of them to talk to the man, this man. You know, most of them were all guys that came over. Then they were coming over here by the train road, you know, emigration right after the First World War.
Was Princeton a big community then?
Well, it was a lot bigger than it is now.
A lot bigger than now. And where did the people, the workers, stay then?
They had boarding houses. There was three boarding houses up in Austin over there. You know, when you go down to the roundhouse there.
Yeah.
And there was two on the right side, Finn, you know, the Italian and the Austrian. And then there was the Finn boarding house across the road there. Then there was a boarding house across the road here. English.
Mm.
And then was down the bottom of the hill there. I don't know what kind of nationality.
So they segregated those houses. One was English.
Yeah.
And I didn't really realize that there was Austrians.
Yeah, there were quite a few of them. Yeah.
And they also worked in the mine.
In the mine, yeah.
They were laborers,
mm-hmm.
In other words, miners.
Yeah.
I see. And you said you had a mining accident one time. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I've had a few mine accidents, but one I fell down off of a raise at 110 feet. Head first, no.
10 feet or 110?
110.
110 feet.
Yeah. Yeah, I landed on a track. Got up and walked away.
That must have been a miracle back then.
Yeah, it's hard to believe, you know. You can go up there and look down. It was a hole that's about 4 feet square. Double compartment, one for the dirt and one for the... And that's what Chester and I were doing, putting up them raises there. You know, you go from one level to the other one. See, you got 100 feet to 110 feet or 20. Between one level and the other one. Well, then you start from here and you put up like a chimney went up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it goes up about 72 degrees or 75 degrees. At then when you get up on top, that's where they start mining, and they dump the dirt in the dirt compartment, they go down to the next level, and on there, they take it out and haul it out, they can. And one time, I don't know what happened there. I leaned over to get something there and I lost my balance and down I went.
Jeez. You cracked your ankle. What was that?
We bruised up quite a bit.
What were some of the mines here in prison? What were their names? And
well, it was the prison mine here had three shafts. There was number two shaft right there, and then the number one shaft down here, and number three shaft over by the highway. With it.
By the highway.
Yeah. And then there was the Alston mine that was down the track a little bit there. Stevenson mine. And the Wynn mine. Francis mine. And the Sears mine. And they were all going at that time.
They were all going.
Mm-hmm.
Full production. Were they all owned by the same company?
Cleveland
Cliffs. And how long did they go for before they really started to like go downhill?
Well, 1927, they shut down the Stevenson mine. That was the last mine going then. And then he, a few years after, 28 or 29, they opened up the Sears mine on it. And that's the only one that was going here. And then Northern Mining Company come in and they bought this Wynn mine there. Archibald, they named it. There used to be the Wynn mine, and when they bought it, they named it the Archibald. So that was working then, and the Sears mine. That's the only two that was working.
And you were still working at the mines at that time. What was the Depression like then?
Pretty tough.
Pretty tough? Did you ever go hungry or did you always
go? No.
Never went hungry?
No, I never went hungry. I had a couple of cows and I could keep a couple of pigs and chickens. And I had a garden and I used to go out and shoot a deer once in a while, whether it was seasoned or not.
Whether it was seasoned or not, just to feed your family?
Yeah, that's right. And fishing, hunting. We never went hungry, but when it came to buy clothes or, you know, some of the other necessities, it was pretty rough. I worked 2 years on WPA. I was working 10 hours a day, 2 days a week, 25 cents an hour.
WPA?
Yeah.
What was that?
Public Work Administration.
What type of public work?
Yeah, on the roads, fixing roads and stuff like that mostly.
I see. It was a government program?
Yeah. Yeah,
and most of the men worked then doing that? Was there a lot of logging going on then?
Some logging, but you could make, you starve by working in the woods, what the hell, they were paying 1 cent a stick to cut pulp.
Back then. But this government program then, they paid you relatively low, but they at least paid you and kept you working.
But you work 2 days a week, to it, if it didn't rain, because they had three crews. You know, one crew worked 2 days, and the next crew, and the next crew. So if you rain on your day, well, you lost that day. So instead of $5 a week, then you got $2.50 that week.
What were some of the prices for things then?
Well, they were relatively cheap, you know, compared to what it is now, but like I say, what they use is you could buy a pound of hamburger for 5 cents, and if you haven't got the 5 cents, well, you don't get it.
That's true.
You know, I was a lot of times I used to buy the tavern there, and I felt like we needed to have a beer, but I didn't have the nickel. It was only a nickel for a beer, but if you haven't got the nickel, you don't get it.
So the Depression years were rough.
It's so relative, you know.
What did the mines do for the people during the Depression?
Well, the company there, they tried all, like, well, at times there, they were working 2 days a week, you know, the mine, sometimes 3 days, and they're like, in wintertime, I never worked on WPA, I always went back to the mine in wintertime. And they give you 2-3 days a week. And even, say, when I was working on WPA there, you know, like the hospital and water and electricity, and that was all company, you know. And once in a while, they used to give me a day's work, you know, like doing something, anything at all, you know, even watchmen who were on the mine, or sometime going change a pole with the electric cruiser or anything like that, or enough to pay the...
You had to be a hustler, though, to get that.
Oh, yeah. But they, they plowed up a big field up here, and they gave us a chunk of there to plant potatoes. And then one time they used to go way down the Stillman, they call it, just a few miles beside of Munising there. They had an extensive logging operation down there.
Did a big logging operation,
yeah.
Cleveland Cliff?
Yeah, oh yeah. And there was a lot of wood left behind, you know, tops and logs that was, my good sense, move down there. And saw him up, throw him in a car there, and one car load for every two families. And they hollered home for him at a truck, and one took a ride to his eyes. So, I mean, they were pretty good.
That was good for you then. I see. What was the doctors and some of the, back then in the 20s, what was the life generally like in Princeton as far as, you know, where did you get your bread and your other hardware?
We had it easier than we got it now. The teacher used to come to the house every day.
Every day?
Uh-huh. Old Joe Negrinelli from the Swansea there, and old John Giardi from the Swansea, and the Winter and Seas used to have a store down the bottom of the hill down there. Used to come every day, take the order, when you order whatever you want tomorrow, and they bring it. And the next morning they come, bring it.
Fresh bread and...
Yeah, well, John Nevio had a baker shop down in Swansea, that's the one he just tore down here. He'd come every day with his wagon, you know, and kids used to follow, you know, he'd go in the house and go and steal the cookies or something.
What year did you get married then?
1928.
Was your wife Italian then, too?
Yeah. I went to Pennsylvania, but my brother and I went down. We had an uncle down there, so we went for a trip down there, and stayed there. And that's where I got married. Met my wife down there.
Met her in Pennsylvania?
Mm-hmm.
Was she an immigrant then, too?
No, she was born here.
She was born here.
Her dad was an immigrant.
And her dad lived in... In Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Did he end up moving anywhere around the nation or just stayed there?
He died there.
He died there. Do you know what type of work he did or anything?
Coal mine.
Coal mines then?
Yeah.
Do you think was there a lot of Italians that worked in the coal mines then, the Eastern Coast?
Lots of them.
Did any of the people...
I worked in a coal mine for about 7-8 months ago.
What year was that then? Just after you got married?
Yeah. Before I got married.
Before you got married?
I didn't like it. I didn't like the coal mine.
Didn't like the coal mine? Dirty?
Yeah, dirty, dangerous. How you work in a place that's that high, you know, down on your knees and miserable.
Do you remember the city then?
It was close to Johnstown, Pennsylvania.
Close to Johnstown.
Ehrenfeld was the name of the town.
Ehrenfeld?
Ehrenfeld.
Ehrenfeld?
Mm, Ehren. I don't know how the hell you would spell it.
Oh, Ehrenfeld?
Mm-hmm. That mine is still going. I was down here over a year.
You went there?
That mine is still going. I go down there. I still got brother-in-law and sister-in-law down there.
I see.
I go down there last winter. Spent a couple of weeks there.
So, do you know of any other Italians from this region that moved, or did you ever travel west to work in California or any of the other states?
No, I was mostly here. I was down in Pennsylvania that I worked in a coal mine there for about a few months. And then one time we went for a trip that we went down, we went to Chicago, we were trying to get a job. The rest of the time was spent here.
Was spent here. Okay, so, Maffeo, you you worked in the mines, you came back, you wanted to stay around here, and I was talking with Isabel, and they were talking about the influenza outbreak in about 1918, and that was before you had really come to the States. Mm-hmm. But do you remember what it was like in Italy during that time?
It was bad. Yeah, it was bad. God, you know, like over there, they never had no funeral like they do here. You know, they carry the people on the shoulders. And they never, during the influenza epidemic there, well, they were dying out so fast, you know, and they were burying them at night. And then at night, you see people, you know, little lights going down the road, you know, candles there. They used to haul them to the cemetery up there and bury them.
So all through Italy, the same thing was happening at that time.
More or less all over the world, I guess, at that time, yeah.
I see. Were the young and old dying, or just the young, or just the old?
No, young, a lot of young people. Well, you went down the cemetery, I'm going down there. You up in the fire ran up there, and you see how many up there, 24, 25, 19, 20. You look at the days up there, and you see quite a few of them. Well, my mother, we got a bunch of boarders down there. She lost 3 boarders, all young guys.
So your mother ran a boarding house then?
No.
Just in her home?
In her home.
Were they usually relatives?
No. All come from the same part of the country there, but I mean, they were all, well, every house in Princeton had boarders.
Was that an extra source of an income?
Yeah, then? It was in one way. I don't know how much
they gave. But I mean, it was a, you know, everybody took each other in to help each other.
Oh, yeah.
Was there a lot of helping amongst families in that time?
Oh, yeah. People were a lot closer than they are now. Well, they had to be, you know. And people used to come over, mostly, you know, single man come over from Italy, come over here to get jobs. And while they get here, they didn't have no place to stay. Somebody took me in. You know, my mother down there.
Did that cause a lot of problems within the family?
Well, sometimes it did, I guess. The boarders used to get a little bit too friendly with the wife and stuff like that, you know. And jealousy and a lot of that stuff there. And then some of them, well, you find all kind of people, you know.
Right. Well, you said you had worked through the mine for how many years?
I worked 25 years in the mine.
25 years. Was there any a pension with that or anything? No pension, because they just didn't do it.
No.
I see. And then you formed a corporation with your brothers to go.
Yeah, I would start working in the woods.
Working in the woods. Was it?
In the woods 20 years.
20 years in the woods? Was there a lot of Italians back then working in the woods?
Not. The Italian would never work too much for it. Woodwork. A few of them, but not very many.
Not very many. Where did you? Who was your? Who did you cut for? And
well, we used to cut. Like log timbers. We cut them and saw them up and sell the lumber ourselves. Like the pulp. Tom Connor from Milano used to be an agent. You know, he used to deal ship all the timber.
Where would you get your contracts from then?
That's where he got the contract from, the companies.
And he would give them to you then? Yeah. Where in this did you cut then?
Oh, well, mostly around the Wynn area here, within 10, 15 miles, you know. From Florida. Dickinson County line there, and down around Lake Farley. Well, mostly around within 10, 15 miles here.
And that was you and your brothers?
Yeah.
Was there any other, like, Italian lumber camp or anything, or, you know, a camp for cutting? And
well, there was a few camps, not Italians, but like Vito Eric had a camp, and Max Freilix, and Jim Gall, and there was a lot of woodwork on them days, you know, a lot of people worked there.
But they're mostly non-Italian.
Yeah.
Do you know any Italians besides yourself that worked in the woods around here?
Well, yeah, one here. Toccolini over there and the Paris, they even had a good job in the woods, and then Grandjic and Alan Austin there. And, that's quite a good Roman, oh gosh, Roman.
Do you have any pictures of it, the logging days or any of the things you did?
Mm-hmm.
No record at all? No pictures of nothing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a shame. So you worked in the mines, and then you worked in the woods, and did things ever get tough in the woods then?
Well, they got tough enough that we had to quit.
That you had to quit?
You just couldn't make any money on that.
Let's see.
You had a hard time to keep going, you know. Equipment was so damn hard to get, and you couldn't afford to buy a new one. You had to keep on patching up the old one, and you know, you can only patch up so much. So then I quit the mine and I went down to Detroit for about pretty near a year working down there in a shop down there. And I came back and I got a job at the base. I quit 5 years. I was there. That was the easiest 5 years I ever worked in my life.
It was the easiest 5 years? Carpenter?
No, we worked in the water department over there.
I see. So it was the easiest 5 years you worked in your life.
I told the boss one day, I'm ashamed to up and get my pay. Oh, you don't feel that way. He said, you get used to it.
So you found out what it was starting, the work ethic had changed.
That's right.
You had to work like a dog when you were young.
I started when I was 11. 11-year-old, 1914, when the war, First World War broke out. And I got through school as an 11-year-old. I was through school. You had 5 years, five grades there, and when you got through the five grade, while you were through there, if you want to go any further, you had to go to college.
Oh.
And so the war broke out there, and they had a little foundry there about mile from where I lived there, and went down and asked for a job. Sure, I can give you a job. Water boy. So, okay, got a job, water boy. I had to carry water about from here to the highway over there, maybe farther.
Here to the highway?
Yeah.
To the road right here?
No, the one, the 35 one.
Oh, the 35?
Yeah.
I'd say
was at least that far.
At least almost a mile.
Oh, yeah. And they had a nice spring up there, you know, so I threw up. I had two pails with a pole on my shoulder here, one pail on each end, you know, 11-year-old, or that big, carrying that thing down, and I had a barrel down, and you get down there, you throw in the barrel, but I never got down to the barrel, you could drink it all before I got there. Hotter than hell. So I did that for a couple of months, and then finally they decided to pipe the water down, so then I started working in the furnace, that firing up furnace there. And I worked there for about a year. I didn't like that. It's too hot.
Too hot.
Smoky in there and that smoke and that. So then I got a job working for the government up in the mountains, digging trenches and putting building roads and stuff like that. Digging shovel.
But you more or less had no other choice. Mm-hmm. You had to work to survive.
Oh, yeah.
And your parents had moved then over here.
Yeah.
Who were you living with then?
Grandparents.
Your grandparents? Were your grandparents?
Yeah, they had a little farm there. They had plenty of work, but there was never no money. My grandfather, they wanted me to go. He said, you got plenty of work here. I said, that's the trouble. Just too much work and no pay.
So your grandparents then stayed in Italy?
They came over here.
They did.
They could hear for a few months and they couldn't. They didn't like it.
They didn't like it and went right back to Italy.
Yeah.
They came to Princeton here?
Yeah.
So. Well, what were some of the things you did for entertainment back in the early years?
You make your own entertainment.
You make your own entertainment.
I used to play the clarinet. My brother there played the accordion. And Sunday we go in some house, you know, our house or somebody else's house there, and we play and dance and have a lot of fun all by yourself. bunch of kids.
I see. Who taught you the clarinet?
Oh, I had started when I was 7 years old. My mother wanted me to play the clarinet with my dad. And Pete was playing the accordion, and figured some days we'd get together. So I took two lessons over there. I was 7 years old.
And
then after I started work, I never bothered with it anymore until I come back here. Come back here and we start practicing up and finally got going again.
And you practice together?
No, Joe Toccolini and I, we used to, we bought a book, you know, instruction book, and we grew up in the cow barn up there. Tooth them clarinet, I think the cows went dry, I guess. Chicken put laying eggs.
But you used to play a lot of wedding receptions, yeah. And
dances.
You played for years, didn't you?
Yeah.
You ever pick it up today?
Well, I'm packed. I'm supposed to go play tonight with them. I still play once in a while. One guy, Kimmy's father-in-law there.
Kim Bianchi?
No, Kimmy Bianchi. Yeah. His father-in-law. I mean, his father-in-law.
Easily,
yeah. He plays the piano. And he told me one day, he said, yeah, come down. Sometimes he'd come down and we'd play together. So, you know, the other night he called me. He said, I got a friend of mine coming. He said, he's a very good violin player. He said, why don't you come down? He said, we'll see what we can make out of it. And I don't know. Well, come on down. We'll try it, yeah. So, go out there tonight.
Did you find that the Italians sort of stuck together back in the, say, the 20s and 30s, There was never no, you know, you didn't marry a Finnish lady or...
No, not. Well, for one thing, you know, back in the 20s there, most of the Italians couldn't talk English, and most of the Finns, they couldn't talk English, and you could never get together at all.
Not to...
to marry each other.
I see. When did that change?
Well, you know, after the young generation start coming up and going to school together and, you know, it kind of changed things.
And you remember the schools back then?
Oh, yeah. They had a school on top of the hill there. They had one in Austin, they had one over the runaround, and one room school. And
up on the hill?
Jim Philadelphia.
Oh, Jim Philadelphia.
Yeah, over on the left, on the right side there. It's pretty good, nice cooler they had there. I don't know, 7 or 8 rooms there.
You remember the Marconi Society?
Oh, yeah. I was secretary for about 30 years, I guess, or something, huh?
I see. What type of organization was that then?
Well, it was more a beneficial organization, you know, they tried to help each other. You had to pay dues, and then when you got sick, or you got too much dollar a day, or whatever it was.
Do you remember what the dues were?
Dollar a month.
Dollar a month? And then it was like a compensation type of program?
Yeah, then like when somebody died, everybody threw in a dollar, you know. Yeah, at that time there was over 100 members, and that was made over $100, and then that was $100 of money in them days.
Who built the Italian Hall then?
Well, they built it themselves.
You weren't a part of that then?
No, it was built when I come here.
It was built, did you ever ask anybody when they built it or when it was started?
It was built back in 1907, I guess, 1908, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you ever own the Italian Hall?
No.
No? I see. And they named it Marconi Lodge.
Mm-hmm. After Guglielmo Marconi, the guy that invented the wireless.
The radio, or?
Yeah.
I see. So they just picked a name out at random and someone important Italian.
That guy was living at the time, and they asked him for permission to use his name.
What were some of the holidays that the Italians observed?
Well, I don't know if they had any special holidays. We used to like the Italian holiday. We used to have, usually Midsummer Day, we used to have picnics over there. We'd band up to play there. And dancing.
Let me see.
Yeah, parade.
Do you remember when the organization ceased to exist?
Late '40s or the early '50s there. Give it up. I think it was in the '50s. 52, 53, I guess. Give it up. Well, the young people didn't want, well, then they started getting, you know, insurances and stuff like that, which in the old days never heard about insurances. And they give it up. Wasn't enough members.
There wasn't enough members then later on. During
Nigana they had, well, there was at least three Italian lodges up there and they all folded.
And they all folded? Did you travel very much to Nagani and associate with the other Italians up there?
Well, we used to go up there once in a while, yeah. But like I said, you know, when in the first years we come here to Nagani was a 2-day trip. Yeah, you had to take the train one day and go up there and come back the next day.
Was it a fun experience going to Ghani?
Well, it was one way. Yeah.
You never worked then in Ghani?
Yeah, I worked in Ghani from 1937 till 1944. Ghani mine. That's where I fell down the ridge.
Oh, it wasn't the Ghani mine you fell down the ridge. Was that the Mather B then, or?
No, Nagani mine.
It was called the Nagani mine. Yeah. That's the one when you're just going into Nagani on 480?
Well, there was one on each side of the road there. The one on the left side was the Adden mine, and the one on the right side was the Nagani mine.
Oh.
They were both side by side there. Mm-hmm. In fact, they were connected on the ground, too.
Hmm.
And then it was the Moss mine that was connected with the Nagani mine.
Was there any, how could I say this? Were there any stores in Princeton here?
It used to be the Winter and Cease, used to call it, down there in the bottom of the hill.
Winter now. And Cease?
Yeah.
Dan Cease's dad?
No, was their dad, his dad, and then there was another dad, Winters.
Winters. And they were, what nationality were they then?
Sounds like the German or Swiss or something like that, I guess.
I see. Did you find that they were mostly English type people who ran the stores?
No, not
all Italians.
The baker was Italian. There was a Gary store, a Mussato store, and the Ginelli store. They were all Italian.
Tony Nigrinelli.
Yeah, his dad had a...
His dad had a store?
Had a store right there where Don's is there. Yeah. The father of that.
But Tony came from Italy too then?
Yeah.
I see.
He was a kid.
So there were Italian businessmen then?
Yeah.
It wasn't just the cousin Jacks or certain nationalities?
Well, there were a lot of Italians around town, you know. And
maybe. Who would you want to trade with?
Yeah. Somebody you can understand, I mean.
Yeah. Oh, so. What types of foods did you eat as far as when you were growing up? Did you have spaghetti or what type of Italian foods that did you eat?
Our biggest diet was polenta and cheese.
Polenta and cheese.
Milk and fruit. Never bought very much stuff at the store.
Never bought much stuff. You had your own garden then?
Garden, had our own cows, make our own cheese and our own butter and our own.
You killed chickens every week?
Oh, yeah. No. In Italy, we didn't leave very many chickens. But over here, we had all kinds of chickens.
All kinds of chickens. And did you have a garden then in Princeton here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all of them. I've been here, I had a little garden there. But my mother always had a riding mower.
Where did you live in Princeton then with your mother?
Down the bottom of the hill down there, yeah.
Way down the bottom, over by Paris? Over
yeah,
there?
Next to Paris.
Do you know Paris?
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah, next to Paris.
And you had your own plot, garden, and you grew, did you can everything then?
Yeah, cannons, and then the freezer, and then the cannons. Because my mother died, she had half a basement full of shelves, with jars, about 200 jars of stuff on it. Half of it was spoiled, it was too damn old.
I see. What kind of things did you plant in the garden?
Just about everything that we plant now, or you think. All kinds of pictures.
Did you use a lot of oil and vinegar back then?
Yeah. I used to send from Chicago, Chicago cheese company, a Chicago cheese company, 5 gallon cans.
5 gallon cans?
Mm-hmm. 100 pound of cornmeal to make polenta. And
so you had chicken with the polenta?
Yeah, and cheese and butter and you know.
Did you have much fish then too?
Yeah.
Did you can your fish or did you just go catch them fresh and eat them?
Put it in oil. They dry it and then put it in oil.
You just dry it in the sun?
Mm-hmm.
And then you just eat it like that?
No, they dry it and put a little oil and vinegar in there. It's good.
It's good then, mm-hmm. Like bacala?
Yeah. Some of them they used to put it in there. Like my mother took a bunch of turkeys and put it in like vinegar, oil and vinegar, and put them in a jar and take them out of there too. They were real good.
Hmm.
Well, I tell you, them old people, they never threw anything away. They save everything. Never waste nothing, boy.
And waste nothing.
No. Kill a chicken, you can even clean the intestines or use them for soup.
The intestines for soup. Oh, did you eat much risotto?
Yeah. Oh, we had good here in this country here. We never compared to over in Italy. We had a little different story.
What did you have in Italy?
A cattolio, polenta and cheese.
Polenta and cheese, and that's it.
Milk.
Mm-hmm.
Fruit.
You had fruit in Italy.
Oh, yeah, a lot of fruit.
You didn't have much fruit here, though?
Nothing. Everybody. Oh, there we do all kinds of fruit.
Do you have any old recipes that your mother used to use? Man?
Yeah.
Do you cook anything? Did your wife cook anything?
I don't cook. Oh yeah, my mother learned a lot of. My mother was a good, really good cook. And my wife learned a lot from me. But I never took much interest in cooking.
Oh, never had much interest in cooking. You just ate, eh?
Yeah.
I see.
I wish I did now.
So you don't cook much for yourself?
Not too much.
So.
Just old wine.
How much grapes did you store?
About a half a pound, 3/4 ton.
And where would they come from then?
Oh God, there used to be a half a dozen carloads of grapes coming in on this little town here.
And everybody made their own wine.
Yep.
And your parents knew the recipes for that, or?
Yeah, not too much of a recipe.
What'd you do to make it then?
Not like you making it. You just squeeze the grapes and put them in a barrel and let them ferment. That's all.
That's all.
When it's too fermenting, you draw it down and put it in the barrel.
No sugar or anything?
No. Then the second wine, if you want to make second wine, then you put a little sugar. Little yeast in there. Make the second wine, and then what was left over, then you put some more sugar in there and you make moonshine.
Moonshine.
So then you had enough moonshine for the rest of the year too.
You used to make grappa then, eh? Everybody.
Yep.
Did you find the men used to like get together and drink a lot, or was it just a social drink?
We used to. Even during the prohibition there when there wasn't many. We were supposed to drink. Okay, on Sunday we used to go in some of them houses there and play cards or start in the afternoon till midnight. Quart of wine a game?
Oh. What did the women do when the men would play cards then?
Take care of their business, eh?
Did you find that the women back then really did a lot of work and a hard life?
They had a hard time. Well, figure my wife, my mother now. She had ten kids. She had 3-4 cows on her. She had chickens, she had pigs. She had a big garden. And she did most of it, taking care of all of that stuff. Besides taking care of the house and boarded it and everything else. So figure it wasn't easy. They never had all the convenience they got now, you know, no.
Did your mother live long life then?
She was 86.
You know, I find that quite interesting is the fact that, like, my grandmother was in her 80s, my grandfather was in his 80s, your mother was in her 80s. They lived for working so hard and all the physical type and environment here with the winter weather and the spring and the changing, the arthritis, but they still lived a long life. It might have been tough, but it was a long life in today's standards.
Well, most of them died young.
Most of them back then died young?
I bet you I can live out 30 people in this town here that died before they got to be 60. Or in the early 60s. There wasn't too many that lived up in the 80s. Like.
Yeah. Was there a lot of sickness back then? About the 20s or 30s?
Well, I don't know. The thing was that they didn't have the facility they got now, you know, and a lot of... Now, for instance, like me, for instance. Now, here, about 10 years ago, I was walking around with a cane. I was okay. I went to the doctor, the operator, they put a new hip in there, and then the other one got bad. I got a new hip put in there, and now I'm walking around up here. And maybe something else. Whereas my stepfather there, well, he walked with a cane there and he could hardly move, but I couldn't do nothing about it, you know?
Mm-hmm. So the medical...
That's right. Now I got, I had, we're here back in 1968, I got...
Gallbladder.
Now in the old days, they used to die from that.
Would you die from gallbladder and... appendicitis?
Yeah.
Appendix?
Yeah.
The doctors were...
Well, they didn't know what it was. They used to say, a member in Italy used to say he died from bellyache. You know, bellyache, what the hell? He probably had an appendix, busted or some damn thing, you know, and they didn't know what it was.
They didn't know what it was. A lot of people would die from cancer and they didn't know that either. But they...
So I think that's one reason people used to die younger than they do now.
Was death back in the 20s and 30s and that, was it really a hard thing for people?